was a year from
Okay, good morning. Good morning. This is exciting. We haven't done this in a long time. Are you joining us? No? Okay. We haven't done this in a long time. Have a Yom Iyun learning session in person in the shul in advance of the Chag. So thank you all for coming. And thank you to Mrs. Miller and to Rabbi Fruchter for agreeing to join with me in kind of creating this program and sharing their thoughts with us. So I want to start with a question. How many oil miracles are there in Jewish life? That's where it starts. It starts with the question of why we have oil miracles in the plural. And the answer is three. The story of Nes Chanukah, this is Nes Pach HaShemen. If you're coming in now, there's a source page at the entrance. The story of Nes Chanukah, Nes Pach HaShemen, is the third in a series of miracles of oil. And so my question for us this morning is, A, to look at all three of these stories and address the question of what we can learn from both the form and method and concept of these three as a cycle, as a series, rather than just looking at Chanukah. There's much to be learned from the whole structure. The three stories are more or less familiar to us. We just don't always put them together. Each one is read as the other two are read as haftorahs at various times of the year. So we're going to look at them together briefly. First, on the source page, source number one, of course, is Chanukah. That's an easy one. My Chanukah, and this Gemara and Shabbos we are all familiar with. I'm just going to summarize it quickly. 25th of Kislev, 8 days of Chanukah, not to eulogize and not to fast, celebration. The Greeks had defiled all of the oil in the temple. They came in when the Chashmonaim were victorious. They came in and they found one pach shemen. The reason I highlighted that is because, as we'll see, although there is a shemen connection between all three, the easiest way to keep track of the difference between the three stories is to realize that each one has a different vessel. There's a pach shemen, there's an asuch shemen, there's a tzapachat shemen. Right? Each one of these three stories has a different vessel containing the oil. That's irrelevant to the meaningfulness of it, but it's just an easy way to keep track. So this is a pach shemen. Sheyemunach b'chot amos ha-kohen gadol, which was sealed. And it had enough oil for only one day. There's some version of the story, which is not our subject for today, that says that it didn't even have enough for one day. But nonetheless, there is the one day that it's assumed they had. Na'asebones, a miracle occurred, v'idliku mimenu shmana yamim. And from it, they were able to light 8 days. Just pay attention to the fact that it says that they lit from it for 8 days. It doesn't say that it lasted for 8 days. There's a difference. For some reason, we always explain the story as it lasted for 8 days. That would seem to indicate that they put it into the menorah and they waited and it just went on for 8 days straight. That's not what the Gemara says, nor would it have been relevant because they had to light the menorah every day. It says that they lit the menorah for 8 days. They were able to extend the oil to the point where they could use it every day. So whether the miracle was in the flask, in the pach, right, or whether it was in the menorah is unclear. I have a theory about that. I think it was in the flask, but that's only because the parallel to the three stories would mean that the miracle was in the flask, not in the menorah. But we'll talk about that in a moment. But nonetheless, they lit from it. Hidliku mimenu, from the pach. They lit from it for 8 days. It would seem that the miracle was in the flask, not in the menorah. They were able to use that flask for all 8 days of the celebration of the dedication of the temple. And then...
by the flask? Is that the container?
The container.
The
pach.
Okay.
The pach shemen. Whatever this pach shemen is... But clearly the story revolves around the pach shemen. It's not that it seems from the Gemara, not that they poured the menorah, the oil into the menorah, and then it just stayed burning for 8 days, but rather they would pour it into the menorah, and there seemed to always be oil in the flask. Hidliku mimenu. They were able to light from it for 8 days. I put that out there because when we go through the other two stories, you'll see that that's the parallel. And if the other two instances, the miracle is in the container of the oil. And that would actually make sense in the story of Hanukkah as well. The second story is a story of Eliyahu HaNavi. We're going out of chronological sequence. I mean, if we did this in chronologically, I would start with Eliyahu, then do Elisha, then Hanukkah, or backwards. Right? We're kind of doing a flip. So we're starting from the first instance in Tanakh, which is the story of Eliyahu. Source number two, Eliyahu, days of Ahav. So we're going all the way back to Malachim Aleph, the end of Malachim Aleph. Vahid dvar Hashem elav lemor. Kum lech tzorfata. Eliyahu had just decreed a drought, no rain on the land of Israel until the king gives up his idolatrous ways. Eliyahu's drought is famous. It leads to a three-year, literally famine in the land of Israel. And part of the story of Eliyahu is God chasing Eliyahu, pushing Eliyahu to go and see the consequences of the famine that he had decreed. The kanos, the zealousness of Eliyahu, leads him to make this, have to go on this journey to see the consequences of the decree which Eliyahu had declared. That's a broader context, but for a different part of the story. God says to him, Kum lech Tzarfata, that's not France, that's the city of Tzarfat, which is in northern Israel. Asher Litzidon, it's technically today in Lebanon. V'yashavta sham b'nei tziviti sham isha almana l'chal kalecha. And there, a widow will support you, will provide you with food, because, of course, there was no food to be had. Eliyahu had decreed a drought. V'yakom yelach tzarfata v'evo petach ha'ir v'nei sham isha almana mekosheshet etzim. There's a lady there, she is gathering sticks for a fire. Sort of similar to the Eliezer story by the well. He says to her, can I have a little water? So she provides him the water, and then he says, can I have a little bread for as well? At which point she says, Chai Hashem Elokecha, by a living God, im yesh li ma'og, I don't have any cake. I don't have any food. All I have is a little flour in a spoon and a little bit of oil in a container, a tzapachat, a plate or some sort. And right now I'm gathering a couple of sticks so I can make this flour and the oil into our last meal, because we have nothing left to eat. We will eat it, my son and I, and then we will die. Vayomer ele Eliyahu, al tiri, don't be afraid, says Eliyahu. Boi asi kidvarech, achasili misham ugak tanaba rishona. First, make a little bit of bread for me. V'otzeiti li v'lach v'livnech tasi ba'achona. And then, v'otzeiti li v'lach v'livnech tasi ba'achona. Provide the food for the Navi. And then, for you and your son, have enough faith. Testing her emuna in the words of the Navi. Have enough faith to say, provide for the guest first, and then for yourselves. Ki kol amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Thus says God, the flour in the spoon will not be spent, and the cruse of oil shall not fail, shall not be lacking, ad yom tet Hashem geshem apnei adama, until God brings rain upon the earth. And that is in fact what she does. V'telech v'tesek k'dvar Eliyahu v'toch ahi v'hu v'veita yamim. Flour did not spent, was not spent, the oil did not was not lacking, and as God had decreed in Eliyahu. So the first miracle of the oil, if you will, is actually flour and oil. But the flour, at the end of the day, the flour is the same answer to the same questions we'll get to, and the oil will be relevant for the flour, but essentially the story is about the oil connection. The decree of Eliyahu is that she should continue to bake with this oil and the flour for as long as necessary. So if there's enough oil for one meal, and now she's going to be able to use that oil for the next, turns out, 3 years, because that's how long it will take before let's assume for the moment 2 more years, depends on what part of the drought they're in. But certainly, for an extended period of time, this flask of oil will continue to provide for her and her family. So if I compare this story to the story of Chanukah, there are several key differences. There are several key similarities in terms of the nature of the miracle of extending the oil, but also some very key differences, such as... So the reference to the flour, I'm going to leave the flour aside just for now because the third story doesn't have flour, so it'll kind of confuse us, but yes, theoretically it's got flour there too.
No lighting. One story about a Navi.
No?
Lighting.
Lighting, right, there's no lighting. There's a Navi.
Life and death for
this. Life and death for this family, right? The Hanukkah story did not involve any kind of life or death, right? It was just a... Excuse me? Right, so there's a difference in the description of the cruse of the flask. I don't have anything deep and meaningful to identify with that, other than it helps me identify which story we're talking about. So the Tzapachat HaShemen is Eliyahu, the Asuch Shemen is Elisha, and the Pach Shemen is Chanukah. Beyond that, I haven't figured out a deep and meaningful connection, but maybe we will. Excuse me? It's a much longer miracle. It's a much longer miracle. Chanukah, we're talking about 8 days. Here we're talking about several years. So on the one hand, it's much longer. And on the other hand, it's also a much more limited miracle.
Right, so it's very personal. It's not...
Correct, because it's personal. It's specific to one person, one family. It's not national. It's not for the whole people of Israel. It's not in any kind of public space. It's a very specific miracle for the purpose of providing life to this particular family, and it's also a much smaller scale, right? We're talking about a flask of oil. She makes a cake, and she has a little bit of oil left, and she makes another one. She has a little bit of oil left. She has another one. It continues, but much longer, extended period of time.
Maybe perhaps one more thing. Mm-hmm. The person who is experiencing this, so she was told what was going to happen.
Correct. Right. There's no pre-warning, correct. Although I have a suspicion that they wanted a miracle, that they were looking for it. That comes back to the shiur that I shared with you in the Daniel series, which was that one of the theories to why the Nes Pach HaShemen is not in Sefer HaMakabim is because the Chashmonaim were very disappointed by the Nes Pach HaShemen. They were expecting Esh Min HaShemayim. They were dedicating the temple. They were expecting Shlomo HaMelech Esh Min HaShemayim, Mishkan Esh Min HaShemayim. There's even a reference in Sefer HaMakabim, in Makabim 2, where they discuss the fact that there should be Esh that will consume on the altar, etc., as it did in the first temple. And what they got was a spark of a little bit of a flask of oil. So they were extremely disappointed by the Nes Pach HaShemen, which is probably why they did not record it in Sefer HaMakabim. That's my theory. It also explains why in the Gemara, the reference to Chanukah is Lashana Acheret. Chanukah doesn't become a story of the oil. It becomes a holiday even by a Cheney, but it doesn't become focused around the miracle of the oil until much later, for reasons relevant to Chazal. But that is an interesting observation too. Okay, let's talk about our third story. And then we'll compare it to the other two and see where we go. Malachim Bet Perek Dalet, the story of Elisha. Now, Elisha, as you know, is a disciple of Elio. A number of years later, so a few whatever the time frame is, there's some discussion as to when this story takes place. Elisha is going through the countryside. There's still a famine. There's still a not because of a decreed drought, but there's still a lack of food. And Elisha is providing assistance to the people in a Navi-isk kind of way. The Isha Achat Minishe B'nei HaNevi'im. This story is often referred to as the story of the Shunammit. It's not. The Shunammit is the rest of the Perek. It's the second story. We read it as a haftarah, so it's just not to confuse the two. But he encounters one of the wives of the Nevi'im. Who? We don't know. Tzaka el Elisha lemor. And she cried out to Elisha saying, Avdecha ishi met. My husband has died. Your servant, one of the Nevi'im. V'yata yadata ki avdecha haya yareyat Hashem. You know that your servant was a servant, was feared God. And debt collector, creditor, is coming to take my two children to him as slaves for the debt that I cannot repay, which was a common biblical era practice. If you can't pay your debts, your children get taken into captivity or slavery. Vayomer Eleha Elisha. Elisha says to her, Ma e'eselach, what can I do for you? Hagidili, tell me, ma yeshlach babayit, what do you have in the house? Vatomer, ein leshifchatcha kol babayit ki im asuch shamen. I have nothing in the house except for a tiny pot of oil. Vayomer, Elisha says to her, lechi, go. Sha'alilach kelim minachutz, go and seek, ask all your neighbors for vessels, empty vessels. Go and collect pots from all your, you're going to have enough oil, you're not going to have enough pots to fill it with. So go and ask from all of your neighbors for a little bit of oil. Me'et kol shcheinayach kelim reikim, empty vessels. Because you're going to store all the oil that I'm going to get you. Al tem'iti, don't sell yourself short. Don't take, okay, three or four, because you think it's only going to be three or four. Go to all your neighbors, get as many pots as you possibly can. Uvat sagarta delat ba'adech. Go and close the door and make sure that you are alone. Uba'ad banayech, with you and your son. Yetzakt al kol akelim ha'ele. And pour the oil into all of these pots. V'hamale tasi'i. And when they're full, take them away and fill up the next one. And you'll continue to take from this little asuch shem, and you will continue to fill all the pots of oil. Vatelech meito, she goes. Vatizgor adelet ba'ada, she closes the door for of the house, ba'ada uva'ad baneha, with her and her sons. Hey magishim elea, they're bringing her the pots. V'himo tzaket, and she's pouring. When all of the vessels are done, they're all filled. She turns to her son and says, okay, where's the next one? There's no more. We filled all the pots. And the oil stopped. So she goes back to the Navi and says, okay, I did what you said. All the pots. I filled them all with oil. Now what? Well, now use your little bit of economic sense. Now go sell the oil. Go and sell the oil. Pay off the creditor with what you get from the oil. And with the remaining part of the oil, you and your son will continue to live. Third story in our triangle of oil miracles. What does this story have in common with the other two, and where does it differ?
It's also one family. It's
also one family, correct. It's also a private miracle between the Navi and that particular family. It's not a national event.
Oil continues.
Right? The oil continues, expands beyond its parameters so that it can provide in a, both in a financial way. Correct? Where does it differ?
She got assistance from her neighbors.
Right, she has to have more vessels from the neighbors. In other words, which is a bigger miracle? The miracle of Eliyahu or the miracle of Elisha? Quantity-wise.
Hers,
right? Elisha's story. Elisha. Much bigger. Because you're not taking a flask of oil or a cruse of oil and allowing it to continue for a period of time to be able to make food, you're filling vessels so that you can sell a gold mine to all of your neighbors, right? In the time of famine, oil is a quantity that's rare to come by, so you're providing for a lot of money. So the quantity is much bigger, the time frame is much smaller, because it's a single event, but the quantity of oil is much bigger. And of course, we don't know, but the assumption is it seems to be a much bigger quantity. I mean, we're talking about that a little flask of oil will continue to provide is one thing. Filling jars and containers with oil is something else. But on the other end, it has a very similar feel to the Hanukkah story because you're using the oil to fill something else. Your Hanukkah story is you're taking the flask of oil and filling the menorah every day for 8 days, and here you're taking the oil and you're filling other vessels. So it has that flavor of pouring from the oil, the miracle of expanding the oil, but at the same time, this kind of... we don't know how long it takes. No. There's no time reference. I'm assuming it's a single event, because that's what's described here. It's a single event where she fills all the vessels, then she can go and sell them. Correct, which is a total maximum of 3 years, because that's the story of Elio. It's probably about a year into the drought, so it's probably another year or two in that story.
It's life-altering, these two. One is saving a life, and this one is saving from being slaves.
Correct. So they're very similar in style. It's about filling a flask of oil, providing for life, saving a life. Very private miracles. Elisha is very clear to tell her that it has to happen in secret. Close the door. It's a private miracle. It's not a public miracle like Hanukkah. There's no requirement. They didn't have to have the miracle of Hanukkah. They didn't have to have the flask of oil last for 8 days. They were dedicating the temple for 8 days. And that was the Shechina, the divine presence's way of saying God approves of what they had accomplished. But it wasn't saving any lives. It wasn't critical. It was kind of a bonus. So these two, it was life-saving and critical. In the case of Elisha, in case of Hanukkah, it was a little bit of a bonus. So what I want to address is, having seen these three stories, clearly there's enough similarity between them to, on the one hand, highlight the differences between them. And if we were studying this from a Tanakh perspective rather than from a Hanukkah perspective, might spend a little more time on the differences between them, because that's from a Tanakh perspective, that's the primary issue. But I want to take a giant leap backwards and look at the broad context of miracles overall, and understand the role that miracles play in Jewish life, in Tanakh, and in the story of the holidays per se. In the context of the holidays, it's just an oddity. Hanukkah is the only holiday we have that celebrates a supernatural miracle. I'm going to say that again. Hanukkah is the only holiday we have whose center point is the celebration of a supernatural miracle. Even Pesach, which is all the plagues of Egypt and everything else, they're part of the story, but they're not the celebration, they're not the reason for the celebration of the holiday. The holiday is about the Exodus. The holiday is about the freedom we achieved. Zman Cheruteinu. It's not Zman Nisei Makot Mitzrayim. It's about the celebration of how we got out of Egypt. It happens to be that part of the story was a series of miracles that brought us to that point. Lel Yetziat Mitzrayim, Lel HaSeder. But the Chag as a whole, the 7 days of Pesach, celebrate our leaving Egypt and our break with Egypt. Not necessarily the miracles. They don't stand at the centerpiece. Even Matan Torah, Shavuos, Zman Matan Torateinu, we talk about the miracle of standing at the mountain and receiving the Torah, but again, the emphasis is on receiving the Torah. It's not on the miracle of the experience of Mamre HaSinai. The miracle, in fact, of the experience of Mamre HaSinai was an abysmal failure, witnessed the golden calf 40 days later. So we do not celebrate the miracle of the receiving of the Torah, but rather the Torah itself. Sukkos again, is a celebration of Yitziat Mitzrayim and God's protection over us. The Anani Akava, the kind of hidden from the text of the story. And Purim is also our survival. But it wasn't a supernatural miracle. The only holiday that highlights a supernatural miracle and says, this is what we're celebrating, is Hanukkah. So that, in and of itself, is an interesting question. Yeah?
Didn't you just say, though, that Hanukkah was a military victory and there was no real significant nace?
No, I never said there was no significant nace. I said, miracle of the oil is a miracle of the oil. The Hanukkah story is a victory of...
It wasn't good enough to record it, though.
That's for Sefer HaMakabim. That's their headache. Chazal recorded the miracle of the oil. I was the address of the question of the Sefer HaMakabim is a separate issue. Chazal fixed Hanukkah as a holiday for the miracle of the oil. Hanukkah is the only... How do we celebrate Hanukkah? What's the mitzvah of Hanukkah? Hanukkah is the only holiday where the mitzvah of the day is about the miracle. Let's put it in those terms. There is no other holiday where the mitzvah of the day highlights a miracle. Hanukkah is the only one. And in truth, there's a certain ambivalence, and attitudinally, there's a certain ambivalence in Chazal towards the role of miracles. Chazal didn't like the highlight of miracles. In fact, there's a famous Gemara in Shabbos, source 4 on the page. You know the definition of a famous Gemara. Why are some Gemaras more famous than others? Because any Gemara you're about to quote is a famous Gemara. That's the way it worked. There's a Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, in source 4, where Gemara tells a story of a miracle that occurred to one of the rabbis. It was there was an incident where a man's wife died, and she left him a son to nurse, and he had no money to pay for the wages for a wet nurse. And so a miracle was performed on his behalf, and he developed breasts like the breasts of women of a woman, and he nursed his son. Rav Yosef said, come and see how great this person is, that a miracle of that magnitude was performed on his behalf. Amalei Abaye, to which Abaye retorted back to him and said, Adrabba, on the contrary, kama garua adam ze shenishtanu lo sidrei breshit. How dishonorable is it for this person that the order of creation was altered on his behalf. Fascinating question. So there's an ambivalence in Chazal over the role of miracles and how to perceive the context of miracles. But I want to come back to the story of these three stories in particular and ask the question from the vantage point of, there's a certain common thread that they all have. And the common thread to all of them is... Oil, yes, but what about the oil?
It lasts longer.
It continues. It has, in other words, they all start from the vantage point of a little bit of oil, but lasts for a longer period of time. What would have happened if the widow, in the case of Elisha, would have said to Elisha, "Ein li klum," I don't have anything. What would Elisha have done then? Doesn't say. She says, I don't have anything except a little bit of oil. And Elisha says, fine, here's the plan for a little bit of oil. I got this. Eliyahu did it. I got this. Eliyahu also. What do you have in the house? Nothing except a little bit of flour, a little bit of oil. Says Eliyahu, I got this. What if they would have said, I got nothing? What would have happened then? We don't know. The Hanukkah story. They found the flask of oil. What would have had not found any flask of oil? So in the Hanukkah story, there's a famous halachic principle of tumah hutra b'tzibur, but they could have used impure oil had they really needed to, but they didn't need to because they found the flask of oil. But they had to find the oil. Why? So there are two schools of thought. And this is really what I wanted to highlight for us this morning. There are two schools of thought. If you look in the source... On the second side of the source page, there is the first school of thought, which is articulated by Barbanel, by a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch called the Maftis HaShekel. He says, "V'hanavi shalom ayesh lach babayit." The Navi asked, "What do you have in the house?" "Lefi sheyamin hag hanaviim lismoch hanes al dvar ma Kedei shelo yeh bri'at yesh me'ayin. It was the custom of the Nevi'im, custom of the prophets, to perform the miracles on the basis of something that already existed, so that they weren't creating something out of nothing, but creating something out of something. It's a law of conservation of matter. It's much easier to expand matter through energy than it is to create matter in the first place. So it's much easier, that was the custom of the Nevi'im, to take something which existed and expand it, flour, oil, rather than, say, wave a magic wand and Harry Potter style outcomes. Well, even in Harry Potter, you can't create food. That's one of the limitations. Anyway, similarly, in the Matzis HaShekel, it says in Source 6, Shemayish le'eshet Ovadyam, there's a Masoret in Chazal that the widow was the wife of the Navi called Ovadya. It's a Medrash. Mayesh lach babayit, v'tom manasuch shemin, she says she had some oil. V'amal le'elisha she yashpia Hashem b'ma'at Hashemin bracha. Elisha said to her that God will allow this oil to expand, to fill all of the vessels that she asks from her neighbors. Without that, and I'm paraphrasing in English, without that, zulat shehaya la tchila ma'at shemin, if she hadn't had initially a little bit of oil, God would not have sent a miracle to create oil. This is very difficult for God, as if anything is difficult for God. God created everything in the initial blast of the Great Bang of creation. That was creation ex nihilo. Me'az v'hala, from that point forward, borei yesh me'yesh. God's actions in the world are to take something that exists, something natural, and expand it. Think of all the plagues of Egypt. In Makot Mitzrayim, they're all built around some kind of physical context that expands. The frog, or the lice, or the sea splitting, or the wind blowing, whatever the context is, it's all some garb in the Kabbalistic language, they call the klipa, some kind of garb of nature to which the supernatural act of expanding that natural phenomenon exists, and not creating out of nothing. That says the Abarbanel, Machzor Shekel, is minhag ha-Nevi'im. That's the way the Nevi'im operated. There's a Mishnah Pirkei Avot which talks about the 10 greatest items of miraculous nature that appear in the context of Chumash, all created Erev Shabbos Ben Hashmashas, the day of creation. It's part of the 6 days of creation. In Source 7, Asarat Devarim Nivru'u Be'erev Shabbat Ben Hashmashot, Elohen, Pi Ha'aretz, Pi Ha'be'er, Pi Ha'aton, Ha'keshet, Haman, Ha'amateh, Ha'shemir, Ha'ktav, Ha'michtav, Ha'luchot, all of these 10 things that were created, the staff of Moshe, and the rainbow, and the story of the flood, and the man, all of these things were all created as part of the act of creation in nature. Because otherwise it would seem to violate the rule of miracles. Says the Mishnah, they had to expand some aspect of an existing natural order. Because that's the way God operates. That's one school of thought. The other school of thought, I think, is much more dramatic. Because whereas the Abarbanel or the Machzor HaShekel says that's just the limitation of the way miracles operate, it's another school of thought which actually starts from a Zohar. Not common for me to quote the Zohar, but okay, that's the way it is. That talks about the nature of miracles in a very different way. Take a look at Source 8. And here I've given you the text of the Zohar. The Zohar there's a very a Hebrew translation of the Zohar is written in Aramaic. There's a Hebrew translation of the Zohar called Terush HaSulam, which is a Hebrew translation. So I've given you both. I'm going to read in the Hebrew for the purpose of saving time. Ve'habrachot shel ma'alo enan nimtzaot rak b'ma sheyesh bo mamash. Brachos, blessings from God, have to fall on something that already exists. Have to expand something that already is there. How do we know this? From the story that we are reading, that Elisha asked her, what do you have in the house? Ki abrachot shelamala einan shorot al shulchan rekan. Blessings from God cannot fall on an empty table. You have to start with something. Kamo shekatav la'alam lechem hapanim. Velo b'makom rek. Right, the lechem hapanim was the showbread. We put the coin and baked the bread, put it on the table, and then there was a baracha, you said there was a blessing that it stayed warm from week to week. But we had to bake the bread. So she said, "En l'shivchatech kol b'bayit ki imasuch sham." And she said, "All I have is a little flask of oil." And asuch is a certain amount. I'm going to skip that line. Amar la Elisha. Elisha said to her, "Look at the next line. The Zohar inserts. Anicha amar la Elisha, nichamtini. You've brought me comfort." If you had said, "I have nothing," I had no idea how I was going to help you. I had no idea how I was going to provide a blessing from God without something on which it should fall. And now that I see that you have some oil, now the brachas can start. So Elisha says to her, "You've brought me comfort. You saved me. I asked you, what are you, my yeshlach b'vayit? And if you had said, I have nothing, I would have said, sorry, sayonara, see you later. But now that you said, I have oil, oh, now I've got it. I've got this. I know how this works." That's a school of thought that appears in a number of the Mefarshim. If you look down at source 9 and 10, you'll see the Mitzuda, the Malbim, that the bracha should fall on something of substance. Based on that understanding, there's an interesting approach to the famous question of the Beit Yosef about the 8 days of Hanukkah, and it's recorded in the Taz, all places. The question, the famous question, probably the most famous question of Hanukkah, is if there was enough oil to last for one day, why do we have 8 days of Hanukkah? Or we should have 7 days, because we're celebrating the miracle. There was only 7 days of miracle, not eight. Yes? You've heard that question. There are more answers to this question than any other question in Jewish life. Somebody wrote a book of 100 answers to this question. It's called Ner Lamea. All kinds of answers. One day for the war, and Beit Yosef himself gives 3 answers. He says that maybe they only poured an eighth of the oil into the menorah each night, in which case the miracle was in the menorah, not on the flask. Right? Or they poured it in every day, and the next day the flask was full. Whatever the circumstances are. Look at the Taz, which is source 12. The Al-Kulam Kashe talks about this Beit Yosef's question. He says they're all difficult answers. There's no hint to them in the story. Second paragraph, V'li Nira L'Taretz. The first night was also a miracle. The matzinu b'sefer hazohar al pasuk mayeshlach b'bayit she'ein hu yitbarach osenes liten bracha el b'ma sheyesh kvar ba'olam. We see in the Zohar that you can't bring miracles unless there's already a something to which to bless. Something to bless. Blessing has to fall on something. Can't have. Right, take something and bless it that it should grow. It's like the famous story about the guy who goes to the Kotel every day and prays to God and says, I want to win the lottery. And finally a voice comes out of heaven and says, "So new, buy a ticket." Right, you got to start from something. Right, expecting your investments in the stock market to grow, if you haven't invested in the stock market, is not going to do anything. You got to start from somewhere. Bracha can fall, can apply to something that exists. There's a bracha shlucha ba'isa. There's a blessing in the dough and the lechem apanim, says the Zohar. If you put the lechem apanim on the table, it will grow. It will stay warm. That will happen. But you've got to start somewhere. Ve'afilu d'var mu'at, even if it's something only very small. As we brach na tem bracha l'harbot ma'at ma she'en kim b'davar ikan, can't have something out of nothing. And therefore, he says, that's the whole story of the miracle of the oil of Hanukkah. You had to find that first flask of oil, because you had to have it grow. Like Elisha, the oil has to grow. Like Eliyahu, the oil has to grow. It's a fascinating, I'm trying to have 2 minutes. It's a fascinating practical halacha that comes out of this Zohar. An extraordinary halachic nuance, something so insignificant we'd never think about it. How many of you are familiar with the fact that when you bench, you have to have bread on the table?
Yes.
Okay? Why?
You have to have something.
You have to have something. That's a Zohar. It's the same Zohar. Take a look at source 13. Rabbi Shimon Patach. Rabbi Shimon expounded the following story. What do you have in the house? Amar la Elisha. Elisha said to her, do you have something upon which the bracha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu can apply? Because we learned that a person should not make a bracha bekat amazon on an empty table. Because the bracha from on high can't fall on an empty table. You have to start with something. And therefore a person should always have bread on the table, or even crumbs, but don't clear the table completely before you bench. It's a simon that the bracha that we're asking for should fall on, expound something that exists. That principle is recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. I've looked down at source 15. Ein la'asir ma'pavi alechem ad achar berkat hamazon. Don't take away the bread until after berkat hamazon. And it's based on this. Magen Avraham Mishubu. It's based on this Zohar. Fascinating idea. Miracles have to be some over something, not because it's a limitation. The Barbanel says it's a limitation on God's power to create after the act of creation. Its power is not in the question. It's God's expectation that's in this conversation. The expectation is that God is not our servant. God doesn't work for us. We work for God. And therefore the bracha that the Ribbono Shel Olam places upon that which we have starts with the assumption that we provide the first step, that we provide the bread, that we provide the flour, that we provide the oil, that we put the effort on the table. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam will bless it. But if I don't put the effort on the table, no bracha in the world is going to happen. That's the partnership. It isn't just about the miracle, it's about a whole approach to religious life. It's about the partnership between the Ribbono Shel Olam and us in every aspect of our lives, including history. The Nesbach HaShemen is a powerful example of the fact that the purpose of the miracle was to demonstrate the partnership between God and the Chashmonaim. We had to address the issue of the Greeks. We had to address the issue of the purity of the temple. We had to address the issue of the rededication and the rebuilding of the temple. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam said, fine, now I'll help you. I'll help you all along. But we had to make that effort. Until Matityahu and his sons picked up the sword and began the story, right, Ribbono Shel Olam is not gonna do his part. The whole nature of miracles is they assist us. Divine assist is not the same as divine doing. It's the assist that we're talking about. It's the bracha and the isa. It's the partnership. We want historical events to take a certain direction. We want to bring the redemption of our people. We want the world to become different. It starts with a partnership. It starts with the sense of we. God created the world for us. Ashabara lakim la'asot. We have to take this world and transform it. And then ask the Ribbono Shel Olam to help our efforts. Sitting back and waiting for the Ribbono Shel Olam to send Mashiach on a flying carpet is not going to happen. That's the lesson of the miracle of the oil. It's a transformative lesson. It's not just about one story or two stories. It's about our whole approach and relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's about understanding that ultimately God's role, God's relationship with us, is one of divine assistance, not to work on our behalf and do our job for us. So that, I hope, is a lesson that we can learn from the story of the oil, or the stories of the oil, and the models that they form, provide for us for Jewish life. I hope you enjoyed that. And B'ezrat Hashem, we will take a literally 1 minute break, and then we will start our second shiur.